The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Steve Nichol and also Craig Burley. And we've got Julien Laron with us too, because we're going to continue talking about Kylian Mbappe. In fact, that is just what Real Madrid president Florentino Perez did earlier this morning. He said to El Debate, "We hope that on January 1st, everything can be resolved." And then later, he backpedaled a little bit, took a U-turn and said, "My words were misinterpreted. What I said is that we have to wait until next year, always with respect to PSG, with whom we have good relations." Anyway, Leonardo was not too happy with this. He said, "It's lasted for 2 years. The transfer window is open. Real Madrid need to stop behaving like this. They need to stop. Mbappe is a PSG player, and the club wants this relationship to last. It's a lack of respect to PSG." Jules is with us. PSG seem to be furious about this, Jules.
Yeah, I mean, Leonardo not happy by the comments by the president, of course, as you would expect. I think, again, I don't think Florentino Perez did much wrong, because from January the 1st, anyone would be able to sign Kylian Mbappe for next season. This is what happens when a player is out of contract in the summer that follows. From January the 1st, he's allowed to pick whoever he wants to play, sign a pre-contract, start talking to clubs. All of that is allowed, and it's been going on for years and years. I don't know what Leonardo was cross about. I believe that when Florentino Perez said what he said, he meant we can sign that pre-contract for next season. I don't think he meant we will sign him on January the 1st in that transfer window, in the winter transfer window, for him to finish the second half of the season with Real Madrid. And maybe that's where Leonardo maybe misinterpreted, or I don't know, but I don't think they needed to go into such a clash today.
Has it been a bit of an overreaction, Craig, from Leonardo? It's not like they didn't know that this is all been going on.
I don't understand. And by the way, this Mbappe Madrid falling out with people, soap opera, is starting to make me want to throw up. Really is. It's child stuff. Will you? I mean, Leonardo and every man and his dog knows it's not going to be a long and lasting relationship, because everyone knows the player's going to leave on a free transfer. Now, it's looking like it's Real Madrid, but it might not be, but it's looking like it. But he's definitely leaving Paris Saint-Germain. So everyone's just got to get over this, surely, and get on with it, for God's sake.
He told them when he signed that he was going to leave and go to Real Madrid, before he even signed for them. That was 4 years ago, and they still think he's going to sign a new contract, or they're still complaining because it looks bad. I mean, seriously, I don't get it. Makes no sense.
But I do think that, I have to be honest, I do think Florentino Perez, while he is right, and January the 1st, and as Jill said, he can talk to anybody, Kylian Mbappe, I do think he's got bigger things to worry about short term than speaking about this. You know, he doesn't have to speak about it publicly, does he? Really and truly. So, I mean, yes, PSG are overreacting a little bit, but there's really no need for anybody in the hierarchy at Real Madrid to be washing their dirty linen in public.
Now, yet we keep hearing it, though, don't we, Jules? Is this situation going to overshadow things at PSG and impact their quest to win the Champions League this season?
I don't think so. I don't see how this would have an impact. I mean, this is what we've been saying for weeks now. He doesn't want to extend the contract. He's happy to stay for one more year, but that would mean he will go on a free. PSG won't get any money. I suspect if PSG said no to all the money that Real Madrid were ready to offer 2 months ago, it's because they also took in consideration that there's the big risk that he will leave for nothing in a year time. So they were also happy to choose that direction. So I don't know what kind of impact this will have. He says that he wanted to come clean and talk publicly about it, because there was a lot of things said in the summer, and the fans read things and heard things, and now this is his version and this is the right version. He also let the door a little bit open on, he said, you don't know what's going to happen, maybe I can extend my deal, but we all know that that won't be the case. But I don't think this could have a negative impact at all. I think it could actually be the other around. Maybe that will have a positive impact on him as well, saying, this is it, I've said what I had to say, now I'm not going to talk about it again, and then we see at the end of the season what we do, and now we can focus on this season, which could be a great season for PSG, and at least there won't be anything about that kind of transfer, what happened last summer, do we know the whole truth, do we know the whole story, because now he's spoken about it, we know what happened, we know what he said to the club, what the club said to him, we know everything now, so they can all move on, I guess.
There absolutely is a negative. Every single time something like this comes up, and it's Mbappe again, the fans, in my opinion, start turning against the player.
So is he to blame for bringing this back up when
I'm not so sure it's Mbappe's fault. You know, he's always... You know, when Perez speaks and then Leonardo speaks, then they'll go to him to speak. You know, if particularly PSG, they can ask Real Madrid to say nothing, but they can't stop them speaking. But they can just try and quieten things down and not keep the fire burning. Because every single time it comes out, it looks bad on Mbappe. Whether it's, I don't think it's his fault, but he's having to answer questions.
But then he did come out with a statement. Obviously, the international breaks come, and he's speaking again about a situation.
Who is?
So Mbappe, he's gone back over what he wanted.
Well, listen, talked about this yesterday. I don't know what else I can say that I didn't say yesterday. I don't see why he feels the need to clarify, apart from the fact that he wants to maybe get the fans on his side for a few months before he leaves. I just think the less he says now, and the more he performs on the field, the better it's going to be for everybody. Like, everyone knows, Paris Saint-Germain fans know that he's going to leave in the summer. It's not up for debate. Let me go back to another point you made, you said to Jules earlier about winning the Champions League and could it derail him. Let me tell you something. Okay. If Paris, and it's a very short, it's a very small window, but if Paris Saint-Germain play the way they did against Man City, which they did win, but they didn't play well, and a better team would have put them away, or a better team in the final third, more clinical, and the way they played against Rennes at the weekend, that's a small window, but if they play like that, they won't win the Champions League, no matter what's happening. So there are some bigger issues there. Yeah, they're top of the league on. Yeah, they beat Man City. But this can fester. Messi or not, the little genius has not quite been the little genius so far, apart from the one great goal against Man City when he hardly got a touch. But all this can fester. And the more people just keep answering back and bickering with each other, the longer it will continue.
You mentioned bickering. Obviously, we saw that Mbappe was a little bit upset the other day when Neymar wasn't getting the ball to him and he had some choice words. which they cleared up afterwards.
I'll be honest with you, I'm sick of this guy already.
We've since seen this. He says, we've exchanged a lot of words like that in the past and we'll continue to do so, but we want to win. But there shouldn't be any hard feelings. There is no resentment at all because I respect the player and the man and I admire what he is. Is this really over? He called him a beggar, didn't he, for not passing the ball to him?
Is this the biggest bunch of school kids we've ever...
That's
ever been
schoolboy stuff.
Is this the most expensive bunch of school kids that have ever been assembled?
Players...
I mean, I'm sorry, but...
Players in a team and on training fields and in games and in the dressing room and after the game and maybe before the game fall out and use industrial language, shall we say. Now, what he said was pretty soft. But in my day, the industrial language was very much harsher than that. But once it's done, it's done.
Listen,
you turn up for training on Monday morning, and whatever happened at the weekend is done.
This is the biggest bunch of crybabies. Listen, let me tell you, there was a player I played with at Celtic, one of the greatest strikers of his generation, Henrik Larsson, who went on to play for Barcelona and what in a great Celtic career. And his first season at Celtic, and I'm not condoning this, and it wasn't me, one of the players in training headbutted him. Because they had got into a fracas, and it was a proper... It was ugly. And there was, you know, discussions after with management and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? You just got to... I'm not condoning anything like that. But this is child's play, considering. I mean, this was actually physical. And you know what? Those two players played together for the rest of the season and were successful and managed to put it behind them. This is just absolutely...
I had the same with the refs. I had two players. One, physically, you couldn't see his face for the blood. The other one we had to suspend. But you know what? 2 weeks later, they were on the field fighting for each other. Not with each other this time, but for each other. So... This is Craig's.
Oh, he's
this
not passing right. me the
okay.
ball.
So this is Mbappe. This is Mbappe at PSG, but there's been some talk of Mbappe with the national side, and we saw some of this in the Euros as well. And
I'm exhausted already.
This is what Mbappe had to say here on playing for France. He said, "Above all, I never wanted to be a problem, but from the moment where I felt like that I was starting to become a problem, and that people felt I was a problem, the most important thing is the French national team. And if the French national team is happier without me." It's like that. Jules, what do you make of this comment?
This is where I've got a bit of an issue with it, because this cries out of like, please tell me that you love me. Please show me that you love me. Please tell me that I'm indispensable, that you can't play without me, that I'm at the best. And then we go back to what we've been saying for a long time as well. The poster boy image, the ego, all of that. Who said it was a problem? No one. And there's no smoke without fire, is that what you say? All the stories that we've heard and that we mentioned on the show and that people know in France and that we've written as well, they came from good sources. You know, that if maybe sometimes he was a bit difficult. Yeah, he missed the penalty against Switzerland, and no one from that squad, or hardly anyone, came and sort of consoled him and said, hey, it's okay, mate. No one. And I think instead of going like, well, if I was a problem, I could have quit or I could have stopped my career for a little bit or something. Instead of that, and instead of clearly asking for people to show love and appreciation for him because he's a prodigy and he's amazing, of course he is, maybe he should have approached that differently and saying, okay, why did no one come to see me? You know, why are all those rumors and all those stories about me in the national team? No one never said it was a problem. But maybe he should think about it a bit differently than what clearly sort of came out of this interview, where he clearly wants people to say, hey, no, we love you, we need you, we absolutely need you because of 2018, because you saw this and you saw that. And that's where I've, you know, and again, we've highlighted this before on the show. It's not the first time.
It is a bad time as well.
In 2018, when France won the World Cup, the garden was full of roses. And Kylian Mbappe was as happy as a kid in the sand, right? But it seems, since some adversity, that he doesn't like the fact that now and again, in a long career, there's going to be some criticism, particularly, and him and I know, because when we used to go back and play for the national team at different times, particularly the Anglo players that were playing for clubs in England, used to get a lot more stick, we felt, than the guys playing in Scotland, right? And it's something you just got to handle. Something you just got to accept. And all of a sudden, here's Kylian Mbappe, who, as Jill said, he's a poster boy, and everything's going swimmingly. And then all of a sudden, the French squad don't perform 3 years later at the Euros. He misses a penalty. Some factions in the camp seem to be cliquey. And all of a sudden, the story's not all about him positively. And in that 3 years, he hasn't have turned into a giant big baby over all this.
Whenever there's pressure on you as a player, the only thing you can do is do what got you to that sort of position in the first place and get your head down, keep your mouth shut and do what you do on the field. It sounds like Mbappe's blaming everybody. It's Neymar's fault. Is it the French team's fault? It's Perez's fault. There's nothing he's ever said that I can remember that was ever his fault. He's always thrown it onto somebody else and then talking away.
And by the way, if he goes to Real Madrid and say Barcelona make some fantastic comeback and sort their finances out and Atleti are strong, and he goes to Real Madrid as the big signing, the Galactico, and they struggle, if he thinks it's bad now, you know this, in that part of the world, they're relentless. And so they will hang him out to dry big time. So if he thinks the pressure is big now, yeah, being in his own country, wait to see if he goes to Madrid and it doesn't go well. Oh, boy, he's going to be very upset.
For more on Mbappe and a lot
Not
more.
Tomorrow.
Not tomorrow.
Thank God.
No, On the Gab and Jules podcast.
Well, that's
twice a week. Twice a week, like my tired. Yeah, you can hear more from Jules and Gab every single week on the Gab and Jules podcast. Make sure you download that wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Cristiano Ronaldo was the glaring omission in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's starting 11 against Everton in a game that finished in a 1-1 draw. He was visibly frustrated as well. He did come on as a substitute, but after the game, Sir Alex Ferguson himself was caught on camera saying that you should always start your best players. He was saying it to Khabib Nurmagomedov, which was a bit random.
Who?
But anyway, the UFC legend, shall we say, Khabib Nurmagomedov. There we go. Jan, why is Cristiano Ronaldo being left out of the starting 11 before an international break?
First of all, I think we just have to say that this video was not supposed to be in public. We have to defend Sir Alex Ferguson there. There was not like a statement from him doing that. Having said that, first of all, I think he was right in his statement because I can't understand it either. Why before an international break needed a rest, I can't understand that. Third point I will make is that I don't think that Cristiano Ronaldo was frustrated that he didn't start the game. This man is 36 years of age. He's a world-class player. He is very influential. It's not like Solskjaer told him, you won't play. And he said, I want to play. And he said, no, you won't play. This is not what happened. Cristiano Ronaldo will more or less, together with the manager, decide when he plays or not. That is my view on it.
Well, listen, every manager has to think about rotating players. There's no doubt about that. And as Jan mentioned, he's 36. But the other side of the coin is there is somewhat a lot of pressure on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer because of performances, because of a loss to Villa at home, because of a loss to Young Boys, because of the performance against Villarreal, which ultimately was a lucky win, and it was a lucky win from Ronaldo. And so there is a sense that he just needs to get, clearly, results at the moment because he's not getting performances. And so there's a fine balancing act there between rotating your squad and keeping up with that pack of three that are in front of you that are clearly head and shoulders above everybody else. So it's a difficult one, and I'm afraid when you don't get the result, then these kind of decisions are going to always come back and bite you in the backside.
Shekha, is this a problem for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? That even when he does leave Cristiano Ronaldo,
no,
everybody's going to talk about
and
speculate.
I think a lot has been made of this. I don't think a lot should be made of this, Keir. I think, well, first of all, hindsight is 20/20, so it's always easy to look back and say, well, if Ronaldo had started, we would have won that game. At the same time, and despite the criticism that certainly we've levelled at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, there is not a manager in the game, whether we're talking Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, or indeed Sir Alex Ferguson, who's seen and won it all, who has not made a decision that they've later regretted. I think it's part of the job. It's part of being human. The only unfortunate thing, as Jan mentioned, is how this all came out. But you just have to roll with those punches, learn from them, and get them. Hope you get them right next time.
As Craig mentioned, recent results haven't been in their favour. And not having the support of Sir Alex Ferguson, even if it was said without him knowing that it would have been caught on camera, does that hurt Ole Gunnar Solskjaer with the fan base?
Well, of course it does, yeah. I mean, somebody's been naughty in the first place digging this out and making sure that it's going round the world. So somebody's trying to ruffle some feathers. But on the one hand, you cannot really question too much what Ole did, because you're going to have to rest players, and he's 36 years old. Personally, though, I would go about it the other way around. The fact that you can put five subs on, in my opinion, means that if you find yourself in a place where results haven't been going for you, rather than resting your best players, you put them on the field, you win the game, and then you take them off, considering you've got five subs. That's how I would have gone about it.
Yeah, but I think that is a fair point that you could do the other way around. What I think is it's interesting to see why is Ole Gunnar doing that. It's obviously for everybody else that you want to play. You're under pressure. Like Craig said, you need to have results. You need to have performances from individuals because the play, the philosophy, the system is not working at the moment. And then you decide to start with Cristiano Ronaldo on the bench. So you have to ask yourself, why does he do that? It's not like he wants to make pain on himself. So that's what I mean. So I think this is something that they've talked through. Still a mistake, in my opinion. But Ole will know that this is a big gamble for him. But there are also signs from Manchester United extending my feeling the assistant's contract and so on and so on. So maybe he's more secure in his job than we kind of analyse in our shows.
Well, I think you've said he's secure in his job.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt he's relatively secure at the moment. But results will dictate how that goes, because when the supporters start to become really restless, and that's not at the point yet. But there are some rumblings. And listen, Ronaldo playing or not, although Sir Alex has sort of mentioned it, isn't the biggest concern at the moment, I think, for Solskjaer. The biggest concern is that he's had a start to the season where they haven't played any of the big boys in Europe because their group's not the strongest, or in the Premier League, whereas City, Liverpool and Chelsea have all played each other.
They're about to get
this
serious
schedule. This is what's got coming up. So his bigger concern is performance. Because without the performances, the results won't come. You can't keep doing that, Jan.
I'm just saying, what we saw this weekend, I mean, the loads of us, we were looking at a lot of games, and we saw Liverpool play Manchester City, and you compare that with the game at Old Trafford. I mean, that was world between the games in quality. And when you see here, the upcoming schedule for Manchester United is terrifying. I mean, and maybe then Ole Gunnar think that I need my individuals because my system is not working at the moment, it's not a defined system, whatever. But still, it's a funny thing to put him out in front of an international break.
Wouldn't it be a good thing to wait till after these games, though, Shaka, to start talking about contracts?
Listen, I can't make rhyme or reason around Manchester United and well, certainly in this instance, the discussion around contracts or the timing of when the vote of confidence and how they assert that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is there for the long term. That's on them. I can't explain that. But yes, I mean, surely there's a more opportune time. Maybe those discussions were going on and they were leaked. There's a lot about this and the timing that just seems odd, but the truth is, I think even those things are more difficult to get right. Do you announce that in the middle of Manchester United's upcoming run, if a couple of games don't go their way? It's a hiding to nothing in that regard.
I think we can agree on. I think there is much more likely that Ole Gunnar's fate as a Manchester United manager will be decided more like in the Colosseum in the old time with the gladiators, the masses, the fans, will kind of make a pressure that Manchester United, the company man, will be fired himself. I think we should agree on that because I think that he's not under pressure in his job from Manchester United, but as results not coming, performance is not coming, he will be under pressure and it will more come from outside than from inside. That's my view on that.
Yeah, it might be a bit more pressure after that run of games that we just saw you as well. Anyway, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more content and more chat like this at the ESPN FC page over on YouTube. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered.
With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Italy take on Spain in the semi-finals of the Nations League. These are the odds to advance to the final coming up on Sunday, where they will play the winner of the other semi-final between Belgium and France. Gab Marcotti joins us now to look ahead to this game. Are Italy taking it serious after everything we saw this summer, Gab?
How do you not take it seriously, Kay? It's the Nations League. I think we've seen that, you know, the teams that have played in it do take it seriously. Obviously, it comes in October, and so there are some people missing. In the case of Italy, they're without Immobile and Belotti. In the case of Spain, of course, no Gerard Moreno, no Alvaro Morata. But make no mistake about it. I think both countries feel that there's something at stake. And if you see kind of a weird squad from Luis Enrique, well, he sent kind of a weird, unusual squad to the Euros as well.
When you see Gerard Moreno and the team and Alvaro Morata in the squad, you still say, where's the goals going to come from? Now they're not in the squad. Where's the goals going to come from? Spain, that's dominating a lot of games, but sometimes just lack that clinic. And I saw Mancini say it's big for them. They want to win it off the back of the European Championships. And I think from Italy's perspective, I think what Mancini will want to do with their squad is just keep the hammer down. You know, they've come so far in such a short space of time, and they were such good performers when they were winning the Euros, that I think he just wants to keep that momentum going. And obviously, you know, taking another big scalp like Spain, like they did in the Euros, will be, you know, another feather in their cap.
And as you can see, this was the starting 11 in the final against England. Gabra did mention that Immobile is not available for this one. Jorginho did say, though, that had Spain beaten them in the Euros, there would have been nothing they could do because Spain controlled that game and made them suffer. Gab, what will Mancini have learned from that semi-final for this game?
I think the obvious thing, and by the way, Jorginho's 100% correct, that was, you know, one game where I think, you know, Spain certainly deserved to win that game. Well, of course, I'll still maintain that Italy deserved to win the tournament. I think what you learn from that game is that, you know, there is no antidote to technique. And Italy, against teams that keep the ball better than Italy and then move the ball around and basically tire you out, like Spain did very, very effectively, it becomes extremely, extremely difficult. And I just don't think Italy are the side that are a side that match up well with Spain. Of course, we're talking about Spain at full strength. You wonder, you know, some of the players who are there, are they going to be distracted a little bit? But it's definitely going to be a test. And, you know, after going, 38 games unbeaten, you know, Mancini was asked, well, is this where the streak ends? And because Luis Enrique said, well, Italy will have to lose one day. And Mancini said, that's fine by me, as long as we don't lose before December 2022, which, of course, is when the Qatar World Cup is.
It's not the Spanish team, though, it's fair to say, Stevie, that we've seen, you know, over the last 10 years or so that dominated world football. Do you think that's coincided with the decline of Real Madrid and Barcelona in European domination as well?
Well, I think the best sides that Spain have produced, a large part of those sides have been from Barcelona and Real Madrid, so it kind of makes sense that when they're not at their best, then Spain won't be at their best. And I keep hearing everybody saying what a test this is going to be. I'm not so sure how it's going to be a test.
They've
got nothing up front, Spain.
What a test it's going to be for Italy?
Yeah.
Well, they did test them, though, in the Euros,
well,
didn't they?
But as Craig said, the forwards they had then, the reason they didn't win the game is because they couldn't score. But now they've got worse forwards than they did during the Euros. They've got Aked in Pino, you've got Sarabia, you've got Ferran Torres, who doesn't kick a ball with City right now. And then you look at what they've got defensively. We could have Eric Garcia and Emerick Laporte at the back against the Italian front line. Now, Emerick Laporte and Eric Garcia couldn't. They couldn't have got Garcia out the door quick enough at City. And Eric Laporte, for some reason, I'm not quite sure, is playing right now, but I don't fancy. So how is this going to be a big test for Italy?
Sounds like you're going for an Italy win.
Oh, my goodness, big time. Absolutely. Yes, Spain will be able to keep the ball, but you're playing against an attack that has no flair or consistency or any recognised strikers against defenders who have been known to make big mistakes. That's a recipe for a victory for Italy, if you ask me.
What do you say, Craig?
I'm with him.
So,
I mean, I don't think it's going to be an easy game. You know, Spain, tiki-taka, keep the ball. But I think Italy have got so much confidence in their shape and their manager. Yeah, the squad might be a little different. They're missing some players. But I think in Mancini, they really have a manager in which they trust. They've got a system in which they play. And they're a threat going forward, no matter who plays. So I think Italy are in real good shape still.
Gab, Italy to make another final just a few months later.
So, look, I picked against Italy, and I think in every game of the tournament, it worked out pretty well at the Euros, so I'm going to go and pick against them now. But that's not the only reason. I mean, look, I disagree a little bit about the Spanish strikers. I think Mikel Oyarzabal has been in really good form, and I think he's a tremendous striker. I'm not going to blame Ferran Torres for not being able, or Emerick Laporte for you know, not being able to be bona fide starters on the Manchester City side, because I look at this Italy team and I wonder, gee, how many of those guys would be starters for Manchester City? So I think a lot of it is going to be down to coaching and matchups and, you know, how well Italy adapt to this sort of strikerless system that we're likely to see with Berardi, Chiesa and Insigne up front. We've seen it before. Hasn't necessarily worked great without a genuine center forward, no matter how much criticism Immobile gets. And like I said, they don't match up very well against Spain. So I think it's going to be tight. And for the reasons cited above, I'm going to pick Spain.
That old chestnut, isn't it?
Yeah,
trying not to go for that one. Belgium and France is the other game, and so whoever does win the game between Italy and Spain will be facing one of these two. These are the odds for this. Gab, is there too much noise going on around France at the moment? We saw some of their problems in the Euros. We heard a lot of their off-the-pitch problems. It seems as though they may be continuing with what we've been talking about with Kylian Mbappe today.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think, you know, with Deschamps, there's always this issue. I think at the same time, we need to, I think, remember that Didier Deschamps, I don't think, is a great manager in terms of coaching and tactics and doing anything interesting. But, you know, he is pretty solid as a man manager, and he's pretty good at keeping things bottled up. They obviously did boil over at the Euros when they were knocked out, and you still have issues with Mbappe coming out and saying, you know, what he said and the uncertainty over his future. But there was uncertainty over his future at the Euros as well. So I wouldn't put too much stock into it. You know, they're coming up against a very good Belgium side, but I'm still going to lean France on this one.
If Didier Deschamps can get to 2:30 Eastern time on Thursday without this lot falling out, that's a victory to start with.
Yeah.
Then he can start worrying about the performances on the field, because this stuff that we heard from the Euros and the bickering, and it's still going on between some of the players and the clubs, is pathetic. But and you know, I'm a little surprised that Roberto Martinez is hanging in there with Belgium. I wondered whether after the Euros he might look to go somewhere else. Maybe he's just waiting for the right job, and or maybe he's waiting to after Qatar 22, which I think is probably more likely. But they are certainly not the side that they were, but they're a decent side. But I still think even a bickering France has probably just got enough for them.
Well, maybe he's waiting, Roberto Martinez, to win the Nations League. I mean, is it finally time for this Belgian side?
I think he's probably waiting more for a Barcelona job or something. I have to be honest.
Well, I mean, that could be there.
I mean, let's be honest, if he wins the Nations League, nobody's going to bat an eyelid.
So, but should this Belgian side be winning something?
Yeah, but World Cups and Euros. I mean, I'm sorry, I know we're broadcasting the game, but it's a Nations League.
This particular side now?
Yes, this side. Is this their last chance?
But this is a side that's on its last legs.
So is this their last chance?
Yeah, last chance. You kind of wonder he hasn't really freshened it up at all. You know, I agree that I think France will win the game, but that's only because the front three that they've got have to eventually put some time together and score some goals and create chances. And they're playing against a bunch of old men. Let's be honest. The back line of Belgium is creaking. Vertonghen and Alderweireld are past their best, let's be honest. And they're playing against the front three of Mbappe, Griezmann and Benzema. That has to be the difference, in my opinion.
Gab?
I agree with you on the back line. Obviously, that's got to be the issue for Belgium. But, you know, going forward, I still think they're going to have a ton in the tank at the World Cup as well. If you look at players like Tielemans, like Lukaku, like De Bruyne, like Doku, you know, we're not talking about people who are going to be old come the World Cup. But clearly, he needs to either, you know, find fresh legs at the back or rely on Thibaut Courtois performing a Superman act, which we've seen Courtois do in the past, by the way. So, I think this is very, very hard fought.
Both of these games and the final will be available on ESPN2. It all gets underway tomorrow. First, it's Italy against Spain, and then it's Belgium taking on France. We have Ian Dark and Stuart Robson in Italy for these games, which is where they're taking place. And myself and Danny Higginbottom will be in the studio to take you through the previews for both of them. So don't miss these two games.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Across the big five leagues, no club can beat FC Bayern's 23 league goal. Across the big five leagues, no club can beat FC Bayern's 23 league goals. Today, Eintracht Frankfurt, beware. Unterreger, it breaks for Thomas Müller. And the chase on now for Goretzka, who buries it. And that goal has come. And Goretzka's first league goal of the season. Ivo Kostic, oh, free header. And wow, Martin Hinteregger levels the game for Frankfurt. It's Kostic, took it on, oh, it scored! Extraordinary! Frankfurt smash and grab away to the champions. They've not won here since the year 2000, but look at this. This is real. Drink it in, Frankfurt fans. Bayern 1, Eintracht Frankfurt 2. And who on earth saw this result coming?
Who on earth indeed? Janaga Fjortoft, I'm sure you were watching that one with bated breath, given the fact that you were the last player to score a winning goal against Munich for Eintracht Frankfurt. You feeling okay about it?
I feel very okay about it. It's 21 years ago, so it was time that we had a new match winner coming up. But there are two breaking news here. Frankfurt winning in Munich. Are you showing my goal?
This is breaking news. This is a little look at what happened 21 years ago, Jan.
Oh, that is a nice little chip, isn't it? But it was Oliver Kahn. It was not a bad goal.
Hey, you're going a bit quick there, Jan. Speeded that up.
Snake hips. Sorry,
that was a great day, but it's a horse tail to his play him in there, and Oliver Kahn coming out and the kind of
chipped
him in. To be fair, Craig or Steve, it's a good goal.
I thought you shinned it there.
Outside of the right peg, yeah.
Look at the keeper.
Big Oliver, looks right.
Elbow
nice
shirt.
Stuff. Look at Jan there. I think I like your hair better now, Jan.
How can it be 21 years since Eintracht Frankfurt beat Bayern?
Since the winning goal scored.
Away from home.
Yeah,
away from home.
Away from home. But Jan was the one who did it.
But it was an unbelievable day for Eintracht Frankfurt because there are two breaking news here. There is one that Bayern losing, because that's not normal. They are, have been having a fantastic start for Nagelsmann. And Frankfurt, after so many draws, they won in the Europa League against Antwerpen 1-0. But winning, they're taking 3 points away. I mean, that was one of the shock of the weekend, I guess, in football Europe.
So it's been such a strong start for Bayern. Do you think there could be more shocks in store after the international break, Jan?
No, I don't think so. Bayern is very strong. And even in this game, I mean, when you have those kind of wins, you need a bit unlucky with finishing. Lewandowski not scoring, Müller not scoring. That is unusual. Kevin Trapp, the Eintracht Frankfurt goalkeeper, had one of the best games of his life. He was saving everything. So Bayern will be steady Eddie going forward. But for us, that neutral, they like international, or like the Bundesliga to be a bit more competitive, this was a great result. But Kevin Trapp was unbelievable. We see Sané here, and Trapp being, he was taller and taller, and there was like an unbelievable, this save is unbelievable, that he's doing that from a short header, and he just take it away with his foot. So that was one of those days that you just knew that you will win at the end. And now for Eintracht Frankfurt, they have a new coach in Glasner, they have a new head of sport in Krusher, and you needed that to show them after Bobic and Hütter, who did so well for them. They should have been in the Champions League last season, but had some problem at the end. And now you needed that to kind of give the belief that these new guys will also steady the ship into, hopefully, Europe.
Yeah, good day at the office for Kevin Trapp, Shaka.
It certainly was. Listen, you go away to Bayern Munich, you know if you're going to get anything. As a goalkeeper, you know you're going to have one of the best days of your life. And that's exactly what Kevin Trapp had. Saying that, as a keeper, going into that kind of stadium, going into that kind of atmosphere, you're looking for a couple of things. You want a good but easy-ish save to start with. You want a good cross that you can come and take and you just grow into confidence. But then when you're Eintracht Frankfurt and Kevin Trapp in this incident, you go behind and you just think this is going to be a long day. And then between the two, club and Trapp, everything just clicked. And Jan mentioned it, you saw it again. That save from Lewandowski, where he was all of 8 inches away, was certainly, there's a fortune, there's a touch of good fortune to it, but good luck that Kevin Trapp earned and deserved.
Yeah, but Bayern are still top of the table in the Bundesliga, which shouldn't come as too much of a surprise as we do break for international action. There they are, but you can see level on points with them, Bayer Leverkusen, just a point behind them, Borussia Dortmund and Freiburg. US taking on Jamaica Thursday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Make sure to catch that game on ESPN2. And Football Americas will be talking about that and a lot more, as Hercules Gomez and Sebastian Salazar always do. New episodes streaming weekly on ESPN+. Well, that will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC. Craig and Stevie look as though they're raring to go for extra time, so make sure you join us.
You're right.
See you then.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kay, Craig, Stevie and Jan Agafiosov joining us. Craig and I have had to hear the same joke off Stevie Nicol 4 times tonight. So
no,
we're hoping
more,
that we don't. Do we want it again?
No,
we don't want it again.
Just in case.
It's not a naughty one. It's just a funny one anyway. All right, just in case we won't hear it again. Right. Mando says, how come everyone is talking about Salah being the best in the world when Benzema has more goals and assists than anyone else in Europe in a pretty average Real Madrid side?
I don't know, I've never mentioned, well, Salah being the best in the world.
Can you tell me any of the goals that he scored this year?
Any of the goals that who scored?
Benzema.
He scored at the weekend?
Yeah, can you remember it?
Yeah.
What was it like?
Oh, what, do you want spectacular goals?
Well, I mean, there's a difference between a tap in and
I mean, they're not tapping from Benzema usually, are they? He's involved in the build-up and everything.
Yeah, hey. Apart from the one that came off his shoulder that time against Celta Vigo.
What the Real Madrid supporter.
I'm just away. Saying.
You look straight through me and give it, oh, man, Benzema.
I'm sticking up for Karim Benzema.
Well, when you score a goal as good as Salah's, the whole world's going to talk about it. Because you just don't see that type of goal every time you watch a game of football. You very rarely see it.
There's your answer, Mando.
Yeah.
Jan, Jason Maloney says, if both Haaland and Mbappe go to Real Madrid, do you see this working for either of them? Mbappe has issues now wanting to be the star at PSG. Does Haaland care?
No, I don't think he cares. I think it's interesting now that a lot of speculating now where he's going to end, because you can't know. You don't know what's going to happen. I mean, Mbappe, he needs to talk about it all the time, it seems. He's got his own talk show talking about that he wants to leave and why he's going to leave and this and that. Let's see what Real Madrid planning. Could they plan that they're going for these three up front with Benzema, Mbappe and Haaland? Maybe. What if Mbappe leaves PSG? Could Haaland be tempted to go and play with Neymar and Messi for a year, maybe a year? So there's a lot of things. I don't think Erling Haaland cares. He believes in himself. He believes that he can go whatever. But you know these clubs, PSG, Manchester City, Real Madrid, they will have the money to get any player they want. So it's going to be interesting the next months.
Erling Haaland's a one-man wrecking ball, isn't he? I tell you what, I would laugh my socks off if those two players went to Real Madrid and Erling Haaland was knocking it out of the park every week and Mbappe was getting overshadowed.
That's not very nice.
Well, I'm sorry, but I would, because he's at this moment in time, and he might be a nice young man, but he's shown himself to be an egotistical maniac at the moment.
A little brat.
Oh.
Spoiled, yeah, big kid.
Craig, you've been constant in this. You said that for a long time with Mbappe, and I agree with you. I remember I interviewed him like 200 years ago in Monaco. Yeah. He was like 11, and he was this cozy kid. But I'm not sure about his strategy now on and off the field. I agree with you.
No, you're right, and it's not painting him in a very good light. And yeah, the football eventually and his performances might just brush that to the side. But these things rear their head when performances are not there. And that's the trouble. You put more pressure on yourself by keep making these statements and keep saying these things that are making you look as if it's all me, me, me. Look, I started seeing a change in him a couple of years after the World Cup, watching him playing for France and PSG, where, let's not make any bones about it, he was throwing himself to the ground in a lot of games, just blatantly diving, right? And that had crept into his game big time, and all these bad habits, I think, have started to creep in, and they are superseding sometimes this super talent that we know he has. So I have no issue with saying that if they both go and Erling, because until he changes his attitude, I don't know about everybody else, but I'm totally fed up listening to his whinging.
Yeah.
Well, someone else you're a huge supporter of is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And Julian, the Blueberry Man, would like to know, can Ole manage huge stars in the dressing room? And yes, he did call him Ole.
Look, I think, again, I think Solskjaer has got a good way with people. Jan knows this better than me. That's how I perceive it from the outside, that he has a good way with his players. But ultimately, that's not what this job is about. Job's about having a rapport with your players and having performances and a plan. And at the moment, it's not. Both are not.
All the best managers.
Lost for words.
Here's the thing.
For once.
All the best managers. It's hard to define it, but it's just the truth. All the best managers, when they walk in the dressing room or they walk anywhere and as a player, the player sits up.
Having said that,
I can't define it. There's a little bit of fear, there's a little bit of respect, there's a lot of things involved in that. And I've never been in the company of Ole or seen him in the dressing room, but I just do not see the players when Ole walks in giving it one of those and, oh, watch, the boss is in town. I don't see that.
Jan,
Yeah, well, it's interesting to discuss this because having said that, we are all 50 plus in the studio and we grew up with different managers and that is put into everything.
Kay,
I love you, HR. I love you, but you were not in the dressing room at Middlesbrough.
Stephen here, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we've got
so that's what I meant.
You're right, I was not. I absolutely was not.
I know you're 29, so that is not the problem here. But what I'm saying is, we talked about that before. I talked to Julian Nagelsmann, and I asked him how he was when he walked into that Bayern Munich dressing room. He was 34, and he said he was nervous. But there is a lot of way to get your respect. I think Nagelsmann will get his respect because he's innovated. He's very good in training. He's a modern coach, and all those kind of stuff. But what I don't understand, Craig, when we always discuss Ole Gunnar, I think we can discuss winning or not winning, not performing and performing. And I agree on that as well. But last year, then whatever, he has to win. Last year he was second. This year, if we go with the argument that you're using that a manager should be good to getting in good players, well, he got in Varane, Sancho and Cristiano Ronaldo. That is not a bad transfer summer
for him. Hold on. I didn't ask the question. I merely answered the damn thing.
Julian the Blueberry Man asked the question. So there, Julian.
Yeah. No, but Craig, in answering that question, in a courtroom, the lawyer would stand up and say, I will protest. I will have an objection there because
You could say, well, these players, Varane and Sancho Ronaldo, came, but did they come because of Ole, or was it just...
No,
Ole was there, and they were going to go to Man United.
But they did not come because of him.
Let me just clear this.
We have to be half full then.
Let me just clear this up.
Okay.
I really don't know what I've said wrong here because I was asked a question. I said I think Solskjaer has a good mannerism with players. But ultimately, it'll boil down to results. I mean,
yeah, and don't turn this around on Craig.
I'm
the nice guy here. 29-year-old. I have to say something to that 50-plus man. Because we have to be constant in what we're saying. I follow you, Craig, in your analyse always of Ole Gunnar or Manchester United, because it's all about winning and everything. But as it is, when we discuss this kind of thing, and Stevie, you're saying that he didn't take those players to the club, but still, they came to the club. So Jurgen Klopp, we love him and he's doing it, but he didn't attract any player then. Shall we use the same argument there?
But hold on, Jan. Listen, I have been totally constant in what I've said about Manchester United and their manager. Totally. Never wavered in 2 years since he got the job full time. Never wavered. As for Liverpool, that's a financial situation more than anything else. I mean, I don't know. I thought I answered it.
I think he's got a problem with his filter. Because he just said there that I said that they came despite him. I never made any statement. I'm just saying you could look at this a whole lot of ways and that they did come, but it could be despite him being there or it could be because of him. I don't know. I didn't say one way or the other.
OK. Are you three done?
I answered that question very nicely. Jan's having a pop at me.
Got the filter.
No. When we discuss Manchester United, Craig will do his part. He will be annoyed and talking about his performance. Fair
and
enough.
And you'll stick up for your compatriots.
I will be told you are Norwegian, so don't care what you say because you will protect your friend. I think that we should meet in the middle somewhere here.
Can you meet him halfway?
What?
I'll
meet him halfway if Man United improve.
All right. Yeah, we'll meet you after that run of games that we showed earlier in the show.
We'll meet in the middle path.
All right.
It's not a curling contest, you know.
It is not. I'm going to do this one quickly because I like the question after it. So Johnny
asks... We'll just miss this one out and go to this one. No. I'm on the clock here.
Johnny asks, Stevie, which team do you see as the potential surprise elimination in the Champions League group stage?
Oh,
Inter Milan. Inter Milan.
All right,
has
there
to
we
be.
Go. All right, I want the next one. Stevie Nichols, cooking instructor,
That's a microwave. So there's a microwave sending this in.
This is a microwave. sending in a question to Extra Time. For all three of you, what is something about this generation of footballers that drives you absolutely mental?
Soft. Easy. We were talking on the show about Kylian Mbappe, how he needs to keep his mouth closed. And they're all the same. They're either talking through the media, they're either talking on social media and all these other platforms.
So social media aside, there were no players coming out and talking and making statements in your day.
You know, there was a guy, I always remember reading an article in the Liverpool Echo, and he said, you know what, I actually enjoyed leaving on a Saturday afternoon after the game. I never heard anything about any of the players or anything else, and I turned up to watch them again at the weekend. He says all this other wasted time and effort, and he was here on a Wednesday night and he should have been there on a Tuesday. He said it's absolute nonsense.
What's the most difficult Twitter handle? Stevie Nichols cooker instructor or Don Hutchinson's maths teacher?
Maths teacher, yeah. There's a few. There's some close. Brilliant ones.
Bearing in mind he struggled with eggs this last couple of weeks.
Oh, easy.
Poached eggs. You ever heard this one?
I missed this one.
He's struggling with his fried eggs. Can't get the yolk to the desired texture.
Oh, no.
I keep breaking it as well when I put it on.
Oh, dear, Stevie.
It's very, you know, this is the kind of things that keep him up at night.
It is, it's a crisis.
Yep, oh, it's very much
a crisis.
Because he dips his toast in it, bread.
Jan, what drove you absolutely mental? Or what drives you absolutely mental about this generation of footballers that wouldn't have happened in your day?
Yes, well, first of all, this is, I'm sorry for missing a penalty. That is the freshest thing that Bruno Fernandes had through his media people doing some statement that he apologized for missing a penalty. That is one thing. And in generally, I think it's okay that that is this generation that they have this me society, and I mean that they are a consequence of this generation. But I think then that they have to make normal interviews as well. Then if they're going to do that, this thing that they should only do with them by themselves in the social media and block themselves out of everything else, that I don't like. But maybe because I'm pitch side, I don't like that at all.
All right, right. My name is Fat Mick. It's for everyone.
What annoys you, by the way? What annoys you about players?
My name
what annoys
is
me about
Fat
players
Mike.
Today?
Aye. Okay.
I don't know. There probably would be a list of them, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Right. But yeah, I don't know what I'd be comparing it to. It's changed a bit. I think that there's just a bit of a change anyway in the way that they communicate in post-match press conferences, because now they're also media trained. So you might have got a player back in the day who would give you a little bit more than most players.
I was reading something
today.
The other day, actually. Is that some players in the lower leagues in England and even non-league are getting their agents to vet questions from local newspapers.
Wow.
I mean, that. Local newspapers are like the lifeblood.
But we've seen clubs banning local newspapers. And
but I'm telling you, that's how much the game has gone. Is that you would talk to these guys outside the training ground, just go out and talk to them. Right? They're not big tabloids, they're small guys trying to make the way. And now these people are getting vetted, and these players that are, with all respect, are pretty much nobody's out with their own little circle. They're not famous anywhere else apart from the locals, and they're having it vetted. Jeez,
they don't know the bond, do they?
Game has gone with people like that.
All right, for all of you, were there any pitches or parks you dreaded having to go to play at? Whether it be the opposing fans, the conditions, whatever. Alternatively, were there any you most looked forward to playing at? Jan, was there anywhere you hated going to or really loved going to?
Anfield. Fantastic atmosphere. We always got hammered, I felt, but it was still
fantastic.
So that
was a love-hate relationship.
Anfield, and it was fun also to play with in front of the yellow wall in Dortmund was unbelievable. But in general, I grew up with English football. I was so desperate, wanted to play in English football. So I mean, going to Bury, I remember there wasn't a lot of the shower was bit cold. It was a dark tunnel into the dressing room, but I loved it. I loved all those kind of things that I experienced in English football. So when the opposition's fans tried to go at you, I think that just motivated me. So I can't come into a stadium that I didn't want to go to. Of course, when you went to Anfield, you knew that you wouldn't touch the ball a lot and you will maybe get hammered at one of the big stadiums, but you still loved to go there.
Stevie?
Easy, Anfield. You go and play. Fun, give it. I would say Millwall away.
I was thinking Millwall when you were all talking.
It was just hot. Just everything about it was horrible. Changing rooms were rotten. The pitch was rotten. It kind of felt as though you were in a prison. There was bad. It was like there was barbed wire and fences and just everything possible to stop the crowd getting on the field to eat you.
Who were happy to say no one likes us, we don't care, which tells you everything, right?
I mean, it was. The atmosphere was good to play in because it was hostile. That's great. That gets you going. But the field was rotten, as I said, and getting in and out the stadium because you got plenty of people wanting to have a go at the boss and calling you names and chucking stuff and just all that. But yeah, that was it. That wasn't a place to be looking forward to.
Never really dreaded anywhere, to be honest. I mean, Crystal Palace, when Wimbledon were playing at Selhurst Park.
Sellers Park, I agree.
The field was rotten.
And I remember playing there in an FA Cup 16 or quarter final against Wimbledon, can't remember exactly. But we pitched up, and I swear to God, around 95, 96, there was not, I don't think there was a blade of grass on the pitch. I mean, it was just mud. And by the story goes that Joe Kinnear, who was the Wimbledon manager at the time, had the local fire brigade in to soak it even more before the game because he didn't want a passing game. But ultimately we beat them because we had some pretty good players like Ruud Gullit and Mark Hughes and others who didn't quite care. But apart from that, you know, going to Liverpool, I used to like going to Old Trafford, and I tell you why, the pitch was seemed big and wide. You always got a bit of space.
Bigger.
Always seemed, and Highbury was the opposite, but then Highbury was just a great little atmosphere.
Highbury was fantastic. Great.
Highbury was a great place to go, but I understand how Arsenal had to move to a big
stadium. Southampton was awkward.
All right.
Adele.
Aye. Well, that was, see, that whole thing for us, we never used to do well there. Because it was, I mean, we'd leave on a Friday just after lunchtime to go to Southampton.
That's a bit of a trek for you.
In a clear run, it's like 5 hours that it was then. But with the traffic, it could take us like 7 hours to get there.
They're not flying those days, you know. Think on the way back how many beers on the coach that was.
The problem is, on the way back, we always ran out, which is frustrating.
Right.
They didn't have flies when you played Stevie, or did you go always with bus?
Biggles.
All right. Favourite Halloween candy, Jan. Favourite Halloween candy.
Is it English?
Licorice.
Oh, I love licorice. I can eat licorice every day. I have to get it out of my house. I'm alone today at home. Thank God there is no licorice in my house.
Yeah, I'm at home as well, Jan, and I'm not going to be having licorice. Well, I may have something else.
Well, it's very similar. It's just take the S off.
Yeah.
Liquor. That's what he's having.
Yeah, should have seen that one coming.
And lots of it.
But that's not Halloween candy.
Toffee apples. Do you remember toffee apples?
I do, yeah.
Do you ever have that anymore?
Toffee apples? The fair. It's like an apple covered in toffee or like...
thanks for the explanation. I never knew.
Did they do duking for apples?
All right, last one.
We call it duking.
Did they do what? Toffee apples? I think so.
Duking for apples.
Oh, I don't think so. That's disgusting though when you think about it.
What?
When we used to do those Halloween games where you all bob and put your mouth in the water and try and grab apples.
Horrible. If you didn't get it, you didn't get it.
Yeah, you didn't, but you got a mouthful of someone else's spit.
Something else.
Right, okay. Stevie Nichols, cooking instructor, is back in.
Not in this day and age, you're not doing that.
No, definitely not. All right, for all three of you, I don't know why this is even...
Oh, geez.
If you were rooming together for a week in Magaluf, which is in Mallorca, who would do the cooking... Who would do the cleaning and who would be the one not doing any work except watching football all day and yelling at the TV? I'm not sure that you'd be doing any of those three things in Magaluf anyway.
Easy.
Go on then.
Oh, it's dead easy. Jan would be doing the cooking. Doing my wife the cleaning, because he likes things to be neat and tidy and clean and the whole thing. And I could sit on the bed watching the telly, making sure they get on with their jobs properly.
Because he won't be watching the football. That's for sure.
Right. Yeah.
Have you been
crazy,
here? Have you been in Magaluf?
I remember
have
you telling
been
me.
Magaluf?
Because you had to learn early.
Yeah. No, I don't mind cooking.
I've been to Magaluf.
Yeah, I've been to Magaluf. Yeah. I went there when I was 16. Oh boy.
I went there when I was 17. Oh boy.
Yeah. Hey, have you been in Magaluf when you were 17?
Yes. That's all I'm going to say, though.
I can't believe it. I have to.
My
mum
and dad gave me permission.
Wow.
Have you been then, Jan?
Yes, but I'm not sure that I was cleaning, I was not cooking, I was not watching TV.
Yeah, neither
did I. Listen, the room I had when I was in Magaluf when I was 16, there's not enough hours in the day to clean it. Trust me.
How many of you were in it?
Two.
Two, okay.
Trust me. Listen, I said to the reception, there's ants behind the bed. He said, you know this one, don't you? He said, well, pull the bed away from the wall. I said, I did. They pulled it back. It was filthy. Oh, my God.
Right.
Jesus. It was cheap, though.
It was cheap. I think that's why everybody goes there, isn't
it? Very cheap holiday. We wondered why it was so cheap until we got there. We walked in the room.
There were a lot of cheap things in Magaluf.
Yes.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Woke up with...
Kay, I can't believe, Kay, that you were 17 when you were there. I can't believe it.
Yeah, well, you think that was 40 years ago, don't you?
No, 30-something.
12 years ago. 12 years ago.
Hey, Don.
Yeah, I was there a while ago, let's just say. But yeah, I was 17. Right, we'd just like to show you something, actually, Stevie.
Oh.
We'd just like to show you Benzema's goal from the weekend.
Oh.
And see what you think of it.
I'm glad.
Well.
How do you like that tapping?
No, that's a good goal.
Not bad. It's not a patch on Salah's. But they won the game, didn't they?
Real Madrid didn't win this game.
Yes, they lost.
But it's not Benzema's fault, is it?
No,
it's
Salah's fault.
Yeah, it is. It's mostly Salah's fault.
Salah's
there you go. Stevie, you might not know how to make eggs, but will you eat humble pie at the end of this show tonight after seeing that?
Why would he need to eat humble pie?
Yes, you were saying that. Oh, he doesn't even score any nice goals.
I said...
Oh, come on, let it go.
Tell you what.
Say yes.
This long to find that?
We were just waiting till the end to end the show with it.
Does he not have a better one than that?
Of course.
By the way, that's the quickest anyone in this show's ever queued a VT. What's that, 20 minutes?
I'd be interested to know the timing of this show because we nearly got to the 36-minute mark like we did the other day,
I think. One derogatory thing about Real Madrid.
Don't worry, we'll be fine anymore for the next show.
Absolutely.
Don't you start, Stevie. I'll be watching, except for when you talk about eggs. Anyway, ESPN FC is available 7 days a week. Make sure to always catch it for more talk like this and more Benzema goals.